gang. It's the Cowardly Lion.
My God. He's on hand once again. Wait, I'll get this thing set up. There we go. There's a hum in there. And every time I get that in the right spot... And now it sounds better, doesn't it? I'm off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Let her teach you, Just a minute, okay? Hold on. Oh, no, that can't come on. Good Lord, it's one of them little blue books, you know, with Tilly the Toiler. I don't know how that got in my pocket. Right, Al? I'm fine. Bry. Fear. Ain't going to give them. Ain't going to give them. None of my jelly roll. Ain't gonna give you none of my jelly roll. Jelly roll, yeah. You ain't gonna get none of that, boy. She's so sweet, she's so fine. She walks down the street and she's all fine. Ain't gonna give you none of my jelly, none of my jelly roll. Boom, ba dum ba dum dum ba bum ba bum ba da da dee dee. Jelly roll, yeah, ain't gonna give you none of my jelly, none of my jelly roll, yeah, yeah. She goes walking down the street, wiggling all the way. The boys stand around and they whistle and whistle, but they ain't gonna get none, no way. Oh, ain't gonna give you none of my jelly, none of my jelly roll, jelly roll.
Yeah, we're going to Papa Chief dedicate this to Margaret Mitchell tonight.
Papa doo 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 doo. Let the doo 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 doo.
Give you none of my jelly, jelly roll.
Hold it there, Al. Thank you very much. That's our slight concession tonight to culture. And we just, you know, we got to do this once in a while. And just, you know, very serious medium here of electronic exchange. And I'd like to make a little note here tonight, even if it's only personal, and I'm going to say it there. Do you realize... Al, and I'm sure that a lot of the listeners probably have heard rumors about it, but this is the 50th anniversary of this radio station. 50th anniversary. And that is a long time in the electronic world. And it really, you know, and it's funny about a station like this I suppose you can say that there are certain, I'd say there are about 8 or 9 stations across the country, wouldn't you say roughly, Al, that have become an integral part of the history of radio. Now, I'm not talking about the business of radio. All the stations are in the business of radio, and they're, you know, they're all adequate and good, and many of them are great. But I'm talking about the history of radio. And I have to say that of the, some of the stations that are part of the history of radio, KDKA, of course, unquestionably. Where is KDKA? Al, do you know where it is? Do you know? Ask Jerry in there, see if he knows. Where is KDKA? All right. Another great radio station that's part of the history of radio would have to be KMOX. Wouldn't you say that? Where is KMOX? Well, just think about these places. Another one that is a great WGY, another great radio station. I'm talking about that have a role to play, did have a role to play, and continue to have a role to play in the history, which is more than radio. You know, when you talk about the history of radio, that's like saying the history of a business. But actually, it was the history of a new, entirely new chapter in man's life. Let's face it, when electronic communications came into the world, That changed the whole world. It has changed the world. And I wonder whether or not even we, of course, us living through it, I'm talking about people who are alive in the 20th century, not talking about people who are involved in the radio industry, but people who are alive in the 20th century, I doubt very much whether any of us today even have the remotest concept. And I don't care who you are, whether you're McLuhan or whether you're, have any concept of how electronic communication has changed the attitude of man towards himself, towards time, towards almost any other facet of living. And I think that probably by the year, quite probably by the year 2200, it's hard to believe there will be a year of 2275. It's hard to believe that, because we tend to think of the here now, and it's difficult to think that 200, 300, 400 years will pass. And people will look back on this time. Al, have you ever thought about it? People will look back, say, in the year 2200, 2300, as being a whole period. I'm talking about our whole century. I'm not discussing, anything, any particular here and now. I'm talking about our century. They're going to look back on our century as the beginning of an entirely new, a completely new way of life. As a matter of fact, that there are historians now who look back upon the invention of the movable print and the movable type, Gutenberg and all that, as ushering in an entirely new kind of life. Well, that was a long time ago, back in the 14th century. And when that changed, of course, that meant people could get books. And up to this point, up to that point, every book had been written out by hand. That the monks, it was generally done under religious auspices back in those days, because most books were religious. And in fact, almost the only people who knew how to, you don't mind if I talk about the history of communications here, which is very, very interesting to me. And if you don't want to hear about it, friends, you can scoot on down and maybe somebody's going to tell you a nice funny little story about Julie Andrews. I don't know. But I'm going to talk about something very rarely talked about. And unfortunately, we're in a time where there's a much ado made about very little constantly. Maybe that's a product of our electronic revolution, too. So there will be an endless number of stories, fantastic stories about trivial things which will not be remembered even, 6 years from now, 2 years from now. How many people are going to remember Clifford Irving 2 years from now? And yet, hour after hour, on and on about this stuff. But the really important things are rarely discussed. And I'm talking about things that are even bigger than, say, such issues which we consider very important at this time. Say, busing. Those are big, big, fantastic issues at this moment. But, by the year 2100, 2200, this will not even be a footnote in history. It's just, one of the big scrabbling things that happened in our time, and it won't even make history, really. But what will make history, and I'm talking about very large history, the electronic world that was ushered in just about the time this radio station went on the air. That's the thing that I'm getting at. That roughly about 1920, an entirely new chapter in mankind's history began. Well, not many people talk about this. Maybe it's because we're living in it. It's just as I'm convinced that during any great era in time, the people don't talk much about it. It's only what comes later they do. For example, in the age of exploration, the age of people like Vasco da Gama and people like Balboa, Ponce de Leon, the great discoverers who traveled around the world and who discovered a whole world out there which had heretofore up to that point been almost completely unknown. In fact, it was only a myth and a rumor. Not many people believed it was even there. That I'm convinced that the people of the time didn't talk about it. They were concerned with their daily affairs, And they walked around. They were concerned with getting something to eat. They were concerned with doing the equivalent then of paying the rent. And in other words, the daily lives of people tend to obscure in their mind the times that they're involved in. Now, the daily life of the people may even be things which seem important at the time, wars that are going on at the time. You know, during the day of exploration, there were all kinds of little border wars, as there always have been. And there were great controversies that were raging in and out. Those are the things that occupied the people. And the fact that there was a man named Vasco da Gama who was sailing thousands of miles away, this is not even known, you know. It's hard to believe. And that's quite true. During the days of the Renaissance, for example, we often think, gee, it must have been exciting to be alive during the Renaissance. Well, I can guarantee you that the people of the Renaissance were not aware that it was the Renaissance. Guys like Da Vinci, people like Galileo, and all the great figures of the Renaissance were great figures, but only historically they were great figures. Because the average man on the street, probably one, didn't know who they were, two, did not recognize the ramifications of what they were doing. And if he even heard about it, thought they were a bunch of kooks down there painting that stuff on ceilings and stuff, and let it go at that. Well, getting back to communications, that prior to the time of immovable print, immovable type, all books, what were books, were hand-copied, what were books for that period. They were hand-copied from one to the other. And so, generally, they were done by monks. So a monk would spend, you've seen endless pictures of woodcuts of a monk sitting there with a quill pen. Well, what is he writing? Well, he's actually copying. He's not writing. He's copying a book. And they were the repositories of books. Very few people could read them. And most of the books were not even in the language of the people of the country where the copying was done. So they were in Latin, or they were in Greek. They were for the preservation of knowledge, not for the dissemination of knowledge, but for the preservation of knowledge, which is a very different thing. So after the Gutenberg discoveries and the movable type came in and the invention of a viable form of paper as opposed to the very expensive parchments which were used prior to that time, it became possible for large numbers of books to be put together and printed in a comparatively short time, which made them unbelievably cheap compared to what they had been before. In the cheap in the sense of how much human time went into doing it. And so suddenly people could get a book that was printed on paper, and it was also printed in their language. This was a whole new thing, too. And so they began to move away from the field of religion. Books began to be printed about many things other than just religion. They were printed about things like mathematics. They were printed about history, things of all kinds began to be printed, and this was a real revolution. And so a guy sitting in his little hut somewhere could get a hold of a book, and if he even knew the rudiments of reading, he could suddenly be part of a world which had only been part of a world of the esoteric, cloistered world of the monk prior to that time. And so the man on the street became aware of things, or the man in the hovel became aware of things which he had not even suspected before that. This is WOR New York. And so then this continued for some time, and of course it ushered in the whole age of reason. It ushered in many different things. It ushered in the Renaissance. It ushered in all kinds of new things, which ideas and people began to exchange ideas and stuff, which had never happened before, where the countries were isolated. And so countries grew up in their own culture with very little exchange, with the rare exception of an occasional traveler like Marco Polo would carry back ideas from a country, say, like China or Persia, and he'd come back and tell people about this. You know, fantastic. It would be like almost the equivalent of somebody coming back from Mars today and telling us about this unbelievable culture that's up there. So it was a whole new way of life. And then that continued fairly on a straight line until the mid-19th century, or the early 19th century, actually. And there was another big change then that happened at that time. It was a discovery that electrical impulses could be sent over wires. In other words, what we call today the telegraph. And that was a fantastic thing. It must have been like black magic to the people, that a guy could sit and press a key, a little button, some kind, and 150, 200 miles away, a little thing would go tick, tick, just as he pressed that, the instant he pressed that. Which meant then that once they developed a code where if he said tick, tick means yes, tick means no. Now you've got a rudimentary conversation going on. And so within a very short time, they developed several types of codes, the International Morse, which came later, the Continental Morse, which was based on ticks, little clicks, what we call the telegraph code, made a whole new ball of wax, totally different. That was a great revolution, because now guys could be in touch with each other. In fact, it ushered in modern warfare to begin with. And so about the time of the Civil War, telegraph was well established. And a guy could, at the front, well, say General Grant, could get orders from Washington, which could be hundreds and hundreds of miles away, and they could exchange information instantly by telegraph. And at that point, that not only by telegraph could they exchange information, a great victory or a great defeat would come back from the front almost immediately, and then be put into the newspapers. This was a whole new thing, because prior to that time, you know that it took a long time for the British to even know that they had lost the American Revolution. There was no communications like we have today. And so if we go by ship, it took 3 months or more for a ship to leave New York to get back to Liverpool in England. It took months, the way they sailed in those days. And not 3 months often, but a shorter time than that. But then the time to get from the Parliament, who knew about a defeat in America, let's say several months after it actually happened, then they found out about it. How long do you think it took for the average Englishman, say, walking around in a town like Plymouth, which was hundreds of miles away from London, and no telegraph, nothing like that? He had to rely on runners, and people would come. And so things were much slower in those days, and people couldn't get exercised over a war they never heard about, really. And so then came along the telegraph, and the telegraph began to do it. And as they did it, Grant or whoever it was, Lee, could send back a telegraph message back all the way to Washington, or Jefferson Davis, whoever was the president, or the head of the War Department, Stanton, whoever it might be. And very shortly, almost immediately after even the same day of the battle, the people on the street knew about that battle, because then papers would be put out, and that was the great age of what they call the extra paper, which meant some big event had occurred, and it was of sufficient importance that they had to bring out an extra paper that day for that. And so guys would be out hawking extras on the streets about a big battle at Bull Run, about a big battle at Chickamauga, and it had happened like the night before or that morning even. So that was a big difference. The people were almost invariably, many times they even knew more about the actual battle than the soldier who wasn't informed. He was way down in the weeds somewhere, hiding out or someplace, or his company was on the march. He didn't know what happened there, but they won or lost even most of the cases. But the people at home knew. So that was a new thing. Well, then this continued, and this, of course, ushered in a lot of things back in the 19th century. And then that, coupled with the fact that there was now vast transportation, the steam ships began to become a real factor. And so now communications was very, very quick compared to, say, the previous century. And communications really makes a big difference. Well, then it continued on up. Very little change, really, except that now the changes only were changes in degree. So a ship was a little faster year by year. And then suddenly, about the time of World War I, there were two or three or four different people working all independently, most of them anyway, people like Hertz, Marconi, all kinds of interesting people. Very few of them are known even to the general public. They began to experiment. In fact, they had begun in the 19th century to experiment the idea of sending waves back and forth without any wires, sending those dots to each other without the use of those wires. Well, now, why was this an advantage? Well, it was quite obvious that you could not send a message, say, to California if there were no wires between, say, Utah and California. You had to have those wires. Putting up those wires took years sometimes. Well, now, in this new system, go to another country, set up this equipment, and they could send these dots and dashes instantly over vast territory without any wires whatsoever. Fantastic change. Even the countries where they didn't have electricity, because they were using batteries, they didn't bother with electricity. Well, that was really a big movement. And they never thought of it in terms of what we think of as television or radio today. They thought of it as communication and a technique to communicate quicker and faster. Well, just about the time of World War One, there had been some experiments before that, but about the time of World War One, they began to carry out widespread experiments in, well, what became later known as radio telephony. Well, that was different from radio telegraphy, which was dot dashes, purely symbolic dots and dashes. Radio telephony meant the human voice was carried. Well, that was almost incredible, because they'd had the telephone since the 19th century. But again, that needed wires, you see. Wires had to go. So if there were no wires between here and, say, Mexico, forget it. You couldn't talk on the telephone to Mexico. But the idea of being able to put the human voice into the air and to be picked up hundreds of miles away was a genuine revolution, a genuine one. Not a matter of kind, but a genuine revolution. Because now at this point, the inflection of the man himself could be heard, not a dot and dash, which told you what he said. And that ushered in the age of the demagogue, who could address millions of people instantaneously, and with the power of his voice, like a great actor, he could sway millions of people. Hitler was the first man who really used it effectively. And so he has a fantastic orator, you know, Hitler. Hitler's tremendous emotion and passion swept people away, in spite of the fact that his words often made very little sense. It was his passion that did it. And that could only be accomplished by a thing like radio telephony. Telegraphy can never do it. It only tell you what he said. How he said it is much more important. So ultimately, when that began to change back in around the time of World War One, they began experiments. And in fact, some of the very early cases of radio telegraphy being used in actual operation as opposed to theory is the famous sinking of the Titanic, of course, which was 1912. And when they radioed the SOS and so forth, that was very new at that time. It was the very latest thing. So by the time the radio telephony idea began to excite engineers, not people, because this was all abstract. They didn't have radio. They didn't know. These guys were experimenting with it. Some of the very earliest experiments, by the way, were carried on at the University of Wisconsin, in case you're curious. These experiments were carried on in various places. And then finally, right after World War One, about the time of when all the troops were returning home from World War One, they began to license all, and they were all originally experimental licenses. They began to license various radio transmitters. They didn't call them radio stations in those days. They were called radio senders. They began to license various radio senders who would put on programs. And incidentally, the curious thing about it is that they were actually, at that time, half code. They were not completely the way we know them now. They began to license stations to broadcast general broadcasting in radio telephony, and they also broadcast radio telegraphy to those stations. In fact, there are even still some stations today that get their news, when you hear the news being broadcast, they get their news by telegraphy. That the early radio engineers all had to be able to be high-speed code operators, so they could take in all the news. They had a receiving station, they would hear the news, and then an announcer would come in and read it on the air. But it was all taken from radio code. I wonder how many guys working radio stations today even know that was true. But it is true. So then, about that time, a few radio stations began to be built in various parts of the country. They experimented with this type of broadcasting, radio telephony. Now, they still had the primary idea was communication, remember, not entertainment, it was communication. So various people began to see there was a great future in this for communication. Among them, Sears Roebuck, classic example. Sears Roebuck dealt with farmers. And most of their customers were farmers. These were people who would live out in 200-300 miles from, say, a center like Chicago or Omaha. They wouldn't get to town for maybe a month at a time. America was a very rural situation at that time. So a station was built by Sears Roebuck, by the way, to send out only farm information to these people. So every morning a farmer could hear what, let's say, the price of hogs was in Chicago. He could find out whether or not grain was selling less than it had today, what it'll sell for next week. In other words, technical information for farmers. You know, that station was one of the great early pioneers. It's still on the air. Do you know the station I'm talking about? WLS in Chicago. Which was, WLS, by the way, stands for World's Largest Store. They were initially instituted to send out information to farmers. Now, they sold then, Sears Roebuck, sold by mail to farmers these devices to pick it up. So every morning the farmer would fire up this device in the morning to hear his information he needed. Weather was very important to them. So if there was going to be a hailstorm, say, predicted for, say, sometime early next week, a cold front was moving in, he had to do something about it. So it was a tremendous service, and that really set radio off on a tangent. I mean, really put it on the map. Now, other stations began to develop for different reasons, too. WLW, for example, in Cincinnati, which was built by a man named Crosley. Now, Crosley originally began to build radio sets, and he discovered that there was nothing they could hear in that area. They could not pick up KDKA, so he built his own radio station so that people could have something to listen to on the radios he built. You know, it's which came first, the chicken or the egg, see? So all around the country, these various communication systems began to be developed, and about 1921, that period in there, they began for the very first time to broadcast what could be called entertainment, but it was always used in conjunction with information. So radio stations would give stock market reports. They would give election reports. They would give all the various information, and then they would put on a string quartet or something that would play a little bit in between. And, of course, that began to catch up. People began to say, gee, that's groovy. Hear music. The idea of hearing music was just incredible. Must have been. And one of those very early radio stations was the one you're listening to. And it was built at New Jersey. I believe it was built by Bamberger. And Bamberger was in the position, again, that was a department store. If you're not living in this part of the country, you don't know what it is. But Bamberger's is a historical department store in Newark. And they had, the radio station was on the roof of Bamberger's. And they even had, the studios were all there. And yes, that's right. Herb is holding up a sign that the studios, the original studios of this radio station, WR, was in the rug department of Bamberger's. And that was a natural reason, because they felt that rugs all hanging on the wall would give them a better sound than if they were, say, in the department where they sold knives and forks, and you hear a lot of clattering and banging in the background. So the rug department had a nice, quiet sound to it. There wasn't a lot of traffic in there. So over in the corner, they had a piano, and they had a great big carbon microphone, and they'd sit there and they'd produce their programs, primarily, again, to sell radios. This is what the primary reason was. And, in fact, at that time, there was a WOR radio on the market. It was called the WOR radio. And it was designed to get WOR. Now, this station was one of the very first. And I guess the only reason that I'm talking about this station happens to be the 50th anniversary of this radio station. And not being chauvinistic, I'm just pointing out that that revolution that occurred right after World War I, we still today don't know the total sum ramifications of it. But now, here we are in the 70s, and constant ideas are flowing out, more from radio, by the way, even to this day, than from television. Television, which has given itself over almost entirely to entertainment. Radio, on the other hand, endless discussion, all-night shows, endless telephone shows where people are calling up about this and complaining about that. That has caused a curious change in man's attitude towards himself, the world around him, and things are of immediate concern to an average walking around man today that would have been undreamt of just as recent as, say, 50 years ago. Undreamt of. The idea that you could hear somebody complaining bitterly about a pothole in their street, which was 50 miles away from you, for example, and getting very excited over is a revolutionary concept. And, of course, then there's been the development of the electronic, I suppose you can say the electronic man. These are people that grew out of the electronic world. And new art forms, everything else began to grow. You can't imagine a Johnny Carson, say, in the 19th century. No way. There would be no parallel to what he did. You can't imagine what I'm doing right now. Was unimagined, and it is incidentally still unimagined on radio stations. Many radio stations might interest you to know that one of the very first things that radio stations did back in the very early 1920s was to broadcast what they called in those days phonograph records. And many radio stations are still doing this. They think this is what radio is still about. See, they haven't really changed in 50 years. All they've changed is the people who perform on the phonograph records. But in a very real sense, that most of the stations believe that they're now radio. You hear this over and over again. Are really then radio. They're doing what the first radio stations did. And they haven't really deviated from that norm since. But I think that's about to change. I think there's great changes coming about. You can hear it in a lot of little subterranean corners. The popularity of what I do, for example, is a curious development. And it's new. It's a new idea in radio. I'm not a radio commentator. See, years ago, they used to have a guy who would come on, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Raymond Graham Swing and tonight's commentary." Well, that's a totally different thing. This is a personal man talking about his personal ideas, me. Entertaining in his own. It's a new idea. In the early days of the commentator, he discussed national issues in a very abstract, oracular way. "It appears to this corner that the president once again erred in making..." That's not the same thing at all. That was really, in a sense, an electronic editorial. That was an offshoot of the old editorial pages of the newspaper. And instead of reading it, you heard a man discussing this thing, or not discussing, giving an opinion. He didn't discuss it. Well, now, this development, which is really of unimaginable consequences, television and radio, I suspect that us living in this century, and I don't care how hip you think you are, and I'm even in this wild world of instantaneous, immediate contact, but this has not yet hit us as to the ultimate ramifications of it. And it will not. No way for us, because we can't tell the future. We cannot predict what a man of 2200 will be like as a result of the revolutions of expression and communication that occurred in our century. You agree with that? No way for us to predict it. It can be better or worse. I'm not one of these people who say it's an unmitigated good. Not necessarily. It is conceivable that the world could be ultimately controlled. It is conceivable by one unbelievably dynamic personality who uses the mediums so well that he is just irresistible to people. He has a certain fantastic sexual performing aura about him that he could conceivably. Now, that would have been impossible, say, in the 15th centuries, or the even up through our century. But it is conceivable in the future. And you see in our time, and this is not only in America. Don't think for a minute this is American. This is a world phenomenon, because after all, Hitler did it. And he certainly was no American. But everywhere this revolution has taken hold, there are people who have emerged who use this medium to great effect. You've seen it in our own elections, that many elections use the electronic media almost exclusively, and that the actual presidential candidate or whatever you might be rarely is actually appearing before people. And in fact, he rarely discusses issues. A beautiful 60-second spot will come on. You'll see this magnificent figure striding into the sunset. And underneath it'll say, yes, move forward with Charles Applerod into a real future. And it's exciting. You don't know what he believes or stands for, but you know it's somehow good because it looks beautiful and so on. So, and this is an interesting development. Now, on the other hand, there are people who feel that radio and television has drawn us together. I submit that not necessarily. In fact, I submit that one of the reasons the world is in strife today, much more so than any time in history, is that for the first time, people in all different countries are fully aware of the ideas of other people and find them repugnant. Now, you wouldn't have found them repugnant 200 years ago if you didn't know anything about them, you know? So we'll have all kinds, and this is a mutual repugnance. And so you'll hear repugnance of a nation for another because of the kind of, you know, that Russians, for example, blame America for the whole hippie movement. They believe this is so because they see films and TV stuff and so forth about us, and they find this very bad scene, and there's nothing with politics. It's a philosophical thing. So it's not necessarily true only that politics are the big prime thing. I'm talking about actual life that's lived by people in ordinary lives. And so a guy sitting in England will watch an American television show, and he will find the decor of the house that's the set on the show. You find it irritating. He didn't like American taste. And so then he will be more and more influenced by that. So there's a lot of subtleties involved. But the reason that I'm talking about this tonight is that we've now reached roughly in this industry, and it's not really an industry, in this revolution, this strange, unimaginable thing where people can talk. You know, as I'm talking to you right now, it may not have occurred to many of you because I suspect a lot of people think they're the only ones who listen, that I'm talking directly to them, which is incidentally one of the subtle weapons of this medium. That it would surprise many of them to know that as I speak, I am being heard, and I can guarantee this is true. I'm being heard in probably 20 to 30 states in the Union. Just one guy sitting in a little room telling his thoughts to people over thousands and thousands of square miles. I'm being heard at this point in places like Greenland and Labrador. Being heard down in places like the Bahamas and down through places like the great swamps of Virginia and Georgia. I'm being heard all the way out to Ohio, up through Canada, and up through places like Minnesota. In fact, all the way out to Kansas. And just, it's an unimaginable number of people. And even into Europe, my voice is being heard. We have listeners who listen daily to this station in Italy and in Switzerland and in France. Now, I'm talking about direct. I'm not talking about tapes. I'm talking about direct. Now, that would have been even unheard of to Hitler. Because, you see, they needed, in those days, they needed a vast network to do what a modern communication equipment does. Now, there's another thing, too, that changed that. That's the development. Of course, it's a development of, I suppose you might say, kind, or rather, nature rather than kind. And that would be when the age of the tiny transistor radio was developed, and people could carry them in their purse. And now you can even buy little transistor radios that are designed like jewelry. People carry them around their necks. So that wherever they go, there is the sound of somebody talking to them. That is even a change from the early days of broadcasting, when a radio set was a thing that was stationary. It was a big thing, and it was part of the home. If you can imagine the next development in television, where you'll have a tiny TV set that's roughly the size of maybe a pocket watch, and you can take it out and hit the top, and you're watching the ball game. That would be pretty dramatic. And that will come. I'll guarantee you it will come. In fact, they're already working on that. And not only working on it, there are models which are actually in operation. And this will throw you in color. Okay? So then, of course, the next one will be two-way television. We've already got a lot of two-way radio. The time will come when there will be personal two-way television. You'll simply go on the air, you'll press a button, you'll pay the fee, whatever AT&T wants you to pay, and the next thing you know, you're talking to your Aunt Min. person to person, face to face, in color. And that's going to change a lot of family relationships in many ways. So we're in the beginnings of something which we don't even know the end of. And right now, this station is having its 50th anniversary. And I even suspect that there are people out there, listeners, who remember, it's hard to believe it, but I'm sure there are people who remember when this station had just gone on the air. After all, it's conceivable a man would be 60, which is not a really ancient man. A man of 60, at the age of 10, he was 10 when this station went on the air. And yet, it's now a half century. And it's a whole new thing. I hope I didn't bore you with this. But we're living in historic times, really historic times, and nothing to do with the Vietnam War and these things, which are like the Whiskey Rebellion and many other things, will be by the year 2228. Just little tiny footnotes in history. But the one thing that will not be a footnote in history was the vast, sudden development of electronic, instantaneous communications, not only between people, but between continents and even planets. It occurred to you that when those guys were walking around on the moon, we were hearing them that instant they talk and seeing them. That's incredible. That's 290-some-odd-thousand miles. That's a quarter of a million miles on another planet. So this is a completely new way of living. And we're so part of it that we don't recognize it. You know, we're just like... I'm sure that a sailor who was on Columbus's boat did not necessarily recognize that he was involved in a pivotal, epical, history-making, turning-point journey. He was mostly complaining about the fact that the biscuits had weevils in them and that the cheese was rotten again. And for God's sakes, I got the 4 to 12 shift again. When are they going to change the schedule? I'm getting tired of working nights. Our daily lives tend to obscure the times we're living in. So, to this radio station, I can only say, as one guy who's been around in it for a couple of weeks, I would have to say, congratulations. You're still in business. But more than that, it's a historical radio station, and there have been many, maybe I'd say 6 or 8 or 9 others like it. 50 years is what they put in. WOR New York, stay tuned for Lester Smith and the news.